Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Gaming News Canada show. I am your host, Steve McAllister. Well, it's been quite some time now since the dulcet tones of this fine gentleman were last heard on this august podcast. It's not for a lack of trying on our part to get him back, but persistence has finally paid off. So with great relish, we welcome back Will Hill, these days the Executive Director of the Canadian Lottery Coalition. Will, so great to hear your voice again.
Well, thank you very kindly for having me. You know, I was just thinking about something, Steve. You mentioned this is off air before we began. This is your first venture into video podcasting. So I believe I was actually your inaugural guest on Twitter. And then when you shifted to LinkedIn, I believe I was your inaugural guest there. So it's only fitting that I come on today as you move into this bold new format and join you all over again. As far as dulcet tones, I'm not quite so sure about that. I do have a little bit of a voice, but obviously a face made for radio.
Yes, you and me both, Will. And yeah, listen, you are the unofficial guinea pig of the parlay / Gaming News Canada. So, but seriously, it's great to talk with you again. And I know you've been busy these past few months, and we're gonna spend part of the podcast having you catch us up to speed again. So, with that, let's start with this simple question: Where in the HE double hockey sticks have you been, sir?
Where have I been? For a while, I was a free agent, and I was pondering my next move when, out of the blue, the phone rings, and the CEO of BCLC, Mr. Pat Davis, a gentleman that I hold in especially high regard, said, "Will, are you still a free agent?" And of course, I responded affirmatively. And he said, "Good, because I've got something that I think that you might be really good for, and that I'd like to pick your brains on and gauge your level of interest." And what it was a role coordinating the efforts of five provincial lottery corporations grouped under the banner of the Canadian Lottery Coalition. These are the crown agencies in British Columbia, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Quebec, and the four Atlantic provinces grouped together under the umbrella of Atlantic Lottery Corporation. So I started back in the fall, reporting to an executive board made up of the CEOs of each of these organizations and working with a working group that's made up of some of the top executives in operations, communications, compliance, and legal from across each of the five organizations. So together, the five organizations represent 8 of 10 Canadian provinces, employ thousands of Canadians, deliver billions to their provincial coffers. And importantly, for the purposes of this conversation or any conversation about the Canadian Lottery Coalition, have the sole legal authority pursuant to exemptions in the Canadian Criminal Code to conduct and manage certain forms of gambling in their respective provinces, including online gambling. And so with that exemption in mind, this coalition got together with the express purposes of curtailing illegal online gambling in Canada, because while what I said just a moment ago sort of confers the theory of a monopoly, the reality, as you well know, is it's not a reality at all. These organizations have to contend with hundreds of illegal websites.
Hey, well, just again, I know we've talked a little bit in your time as a free agent, and I know this, you know, you didn't take this job just because you needed a paycheck, and given your background at OLG and your experience in this industry, but what really motivated, was it just a conversation with Pat that motivated you to take this job, or maybe what else went into this?
Well, I had to think very carefully about it. I will confess that at one point in my journey, I contemplated whether I wanted to continue in commercial gambling, whether I wanted to go back to professional sports. As you well know, that's where you and I first met, when I was with the Blue Jays and you were with the Globe and Mail, way back in those halcyon days. And ultimately, when Pat presented this to me, I thought about it and I thought, yeah, that sounds like something that would fit well with my skills, communications, strategy, stakeholder management, but also never mind sort of a professional fit. On a personal level, one of the things that always struck me during 11 years at OLG is the tremendous amount of good that the Crown corporations do across Canada. I mean, these are agencies that are set up by dint of provincial legislation to benefit the people and their provinces that they work in. Whether it's supporting healthcare, hospitals, community programs and services, education, First Nations development. They are literally set up, and you can draw a straight line from their activities, the proceeds, to very good causes. And it's always been thus. I mean, I there's a great story that I'm reminded of, a dear friend of mine who now sits on the board of OLG, Tom Marinelli. More than a quarter century ago, he was coaching kids in minor hockey in Northern Ontario. And he was struck by every arena that he went in. There was a plaque at the front door that said something to the effect of, this building was built with proceeds from Ontario lotteries. And he started seeing them in many different places and realized that's the kind of organization I want to be a part of. And so he joined and eventually at one point rose to be the interim CEO on two separate occasions. And as I say, now continues to sit on its board of directors. And when you think of, you know, what led him to his engagement, it's kind of what led me back to the Canadian Crown life is I believe in these organizations. I believe in the purposes for which they're set up. I believe in the idea of taking commercial gambling and purposing it for the best of all possible causes. And so helping all of these folks turned out to be a relatively easy choice. So I signed on quite willingly, quite enthusiastically. Now, capably is an entirely other matter, but we'll see about that.
It's funny you tell that story about Tom Marinelli. Well, and it reminds me of my years growing up in Eastern Ontario and the Wintario grants at that time. I was 12 years old, I think, in 72 when the Wintario grants came along, and those grants were responsible for new arenas being built outside of Kingston in Athens, Ontario, a small community just north of Brockville. And three or four arenas back then, I think there was an arena in Cornwall built at that time. And those were kind of all built off the backs of those Wintario grants. So that's something that certainly is close to my heart as well. The other thing I wanted to mention too, well, while you talk about the lottery and gaming corporations, is, and we had this conversation with Brianna Dura-Shawal on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and Paul Burns from the Canadian Gaming Association, and that's the kind of leading edge work that the corporations have done in terms of responsible gambling, specifically OLG with the PlaySmart program and BCLC with GameSense.
100%. And that speaks to sort of the mandate that each of these agencies are presented with. They are literally set up by dint of provincial legislation to benefit their provinces in many different ways. And part of that is, if you're going to engage in a business that's socially contentious like gambling, well, if you're going to do it right. And quite frankly, that's very Canadian of us. But it's something that's infused the activities, the business activities of all these corporations for many, many years. They are keen, if not laser focused, on promoting the highest standards of responsible gambling. I mean, I look back with fondness and great pride on the fact that during my 11 years at OLG, we became the only two-time winner ever of the Responsible Gambling Operator of the Year, or pardon me, biannual, so I guess the years, from the World Lottery Association. And of course, you mentioned GameSense from BCLC and how it's been licensed out to an absolute gaming Goliath in MGM Resorts International, which uses those tools in all of its different settings, both terrestrial and digital. This is something that they do and do very well purposely and take a leading role, not just in North America, but globally.
Hey, Will, we'll maybe get right to the quote elephant in the room. We both follow this industry really closely. We're quite aware of what's happened in Ontario with the opening up of the marketplace here, 48 operators here now, and not including OLG. And OLG has coexisted, it seems, quite nicely with the regulated operators in the province here. Mm-hmm. Matthew Lohman wrote about this in Play Canada last week about, you know, is they're not an easy solution here to other provinces following going down the yellow brick road that is regulated gambling. what can you just talk about the coalition's position on this? And I know this isn't just, there's not a black and white answer here.
Sure. As it relates to the business of private markets or open markets, the coalition doesn't take a position very quite deliberately because quite frankly, each of these crown lottery corporations are serving at the pleasure of government. And so the decision to open up a market and introduce new private operators, where previously there was a legalized monopoly or a quasi-monopoly, isn't the decision to be made by these coalition members. That's resident with their political masters. And so, quite frankly, we're agnostic because whatever position we take, If a provincial government decides to open up its market, well, then in the same way that OLG has willingly and enthusiastically embraced competition, all of our coalition members will do the same. This coalition wasn't formed in response to the idea of opening private markets. This isn't about preventing the growth of industry. It's about maintaining the integrity of the existing one. It's not about protecting turf. It's about protecting the law. We have been focused from the outset, and certainly from the time of my arrival, on the idea of curtailing illegal online gambling. Now, where there's an intersection with private markets is the business of illegal online gambling has been a problem in Canada for about two decades, but it's become wholly more complicated in the last 2 years. Because quite frankly, you now have operators that are legally enabled to take wagering in one province. But some, and I'm not calling out names, I certainly won't do that, some are continuing to maintain legacy operations in many other provinces. And where I say it's become wholly more complicated is, you know, many of those operators have now been conferred with the sheen of legality or authenticity by virtue of their status as a registrant in Ontario. The research that everyone always looks at and points to when it comes to illegal online gambling is the largest number of Canadians don't know or don't understand that the sites they're gambling on are illegal. They just don't. In many provinces, if you ask the people, you know, who's responsible for commercial gambling in your province and who has the legal authority to offer commercial gambling, some will say the government, some will say the private sector, some will say government and private sector, but most will admit to just not knowing at all. Where there's an issue that's arisen in the last 2 years, it's been an increased volume in advertising extending out of one region where all those activities are legalized, regulated, and monitored, and good for them. But when that advertising is then blasted into nine other provinces and three Canadian territories where those operators don't have any legal standing, well, that becomes much more complicated. And much more difficult to deal with. And so one part of our work as a coalition is educating people on these issues, because quite frankly, if the Canadian populace doesn't know or understand, oftentimes some of the people that have to make decisions or take action on this are equally in the dark.
Hey, well, two questions off what you said. You know, given the last 2 years, I mean, is there such a thing as a gray market in Canada today, or is that no longer the case given what happened with the amendment to the Criminal Code 2 years ago?
Well, I'm delighted you asked that specific question because it speaks to one particular change in my vocabulary. I no longer use the words gray market because, quite frankly, as I sat back and thought about it, gray is meant to convey some degree of ambiguity. And I'm sorry, if you go and read the Canadian Criminal Code, there's absolutely nothing ambiguous about its section on gambling and gaming houses. It's very particular. It essentially says, and I know you know this, but for the benefit of those that are watching that don't understand the particulars of Canadian gaming law, the Canadian Criminal Code says gambling in all its forms is illegal in Canada, except for. And it carves out several narrow exemptions. And the biggest one of those exemptions is where and when a province or a series of provinces jointly together conduct and manage lottery schemes, which, of course, as you know, is the legalese in Canada for commercial gambling activities. And so for decades now, beginning with those lotteries that you talked about right off the top, the days of Fred Davis and Faye Dance going around Ontario, you have had a situation where each of the provinces have been able to set up, by dint of provincial legislation, a crown agency that handles operations for gaming on its behalf, either directly on its own or by contracting out service providers who are carefully supervised. And so that in all times and all places, you have the government through its agency positioned as the operating mind behind the activity. And everything else, quite frankly, is illegal. So here in Ontario, you now have, at least as it relates to the online gaming realm that you want to discuss, you have OLG operating OLG.ca under the regulation of the AGCO, and you have a whole cohort of private operators that are conducted and managed by iGaming Ontario, a subsidiary of the AGCO. And so you're meeting that legal obligation to conduct and manage. And so what you've got in Ontario is a legalized, regulated, and monitored product that stands in stark contrast from the rest of the country.
And then on the sports betting advertising issue, obviously that's been a hot button topic, pretty much going back to the days where you and I were doing these shows on Clubhouse and in the early days of Gaming News Canada. What are the kinds of conversations the coalition's having around that issue, and who's it having with? And again, yeah, we know for sure that if there's a Blue Jays game on Sportsnet, that sports betting advertising is popping up. If you're watching the game in Penticton or Corner Brook or Halifax, you're getting the same broadcast experience that we're getting here in Kincardine and you in the Greater Toronto Area. But what are those conversations, and who are you having them with?
Well, I mean, the concern obviously goes back to the reality that you have operators that are regionally enabled to take wagering in just one province that are buying national media packages that cover all 10. Our position is that just creates consumer confusion. And it adds to what is already a confusing situation and has been for some time, you now have a greater presence online, on TV, on radio, et cetera, for gambling operators than perhaps ever before. But outside of the little fine print down in the very corner of the screen, there's only that small little notation, you know, must be resident in Ontario and 19 years of age or older, or Ontario only, whatever the fine print reads. But that fine print, just by the fact of like its sheer size on the screen, goes largely unnoticed during the course of a 30-second commercial and by the largest number of people across the country. And so if people are possessed with the idea of gaming and sports betting as a means of entertainment, they might not know or understand. In fact, quite likely it's the case that they don't, they are indirectly engaging with an illegal service if they are placing wagers outside of Ontario. It sort of ignores the one important overlay that I absolutely have to mention, because I don't want to get too hung up on the whole idea of Ontario. The biggest overlay here is the pure illegals. And when I say pure illegals, right, I'm referring to those operators that have offered games of chance and sports betting and other forms of wagering for decades now, and eschewed regulation and registration anywhere and everywhere. And quite frankly, those are the ones that are most difficult to deal with. And when we think of what they bring along with them, they are not accountable or responsible for introducing typical responsible gambling features like age of majority controls. They are not responsible or accountable for financial data reporting, opening up the door to things like fraud, anti-money laundering issues, misdirection of funds. And certainly, they're not responsible for paying tax or contributing to the social good. Literally, they are siphoning money away that could otherwise be redirected to provincial priorities like hospitals, healthcare, education, First Nations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Go on down the list of the Crown corporations across Canada, and you'll see where the money goes. It's typically to some of the very best causes imaginable. And in this particular instance, There are funds that are being lost to offshore operators from places in the Europe, UK, Malta, the Caribbean, that aren't registered and aren't regulated, aren't legalized, and certainly aren't monitored. And so that creates a whole host of problems that we're trying to deal with.
A lot of the, many of the lottery corporations across the country, well, do have pretty healthy marketing budgets. What's going on right now in Canada, has that forced the corporations to even beef up their marketing budgets a little bit more to help educate? And also, it's obviously, it is a much more competitive environment. Mobile gaming is certainly a cause of that, but just the influx of operators in Ontario as well.
So one of the interesting evolutions that I've observed, and it dates back to something that I'm especially proud of from my years at OLG. I actually worked quite closely with different individuals to establish a sponsorship marketing deal between OLG and the Toronto Raptors that a year later became a global partnership with all of the MLSC properties, all their teams, all their venues. It's a deal that remains in place to this day. And what you've seen across Canada is a number of the Crown corporations entering the pro sports arena, particularly since the advent of single event wagering, that's where you get the eyeballs and that's where you can draw the attention. But that also comes at a cost and a premium. That is not cheap real estate from a sponsorship perspective, but all of these corporations have entered into arrangements, whether it's the BCLC with the Canucks and the BC Lions, or Manitoba Liquor and Lotteries worked with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and the Winnipeg Jets. And of course, Lotto Quebec is very active in the sports arena in its province. That's actually been sort of an interesting evolution, is particularly as sports betting has become more of a tool for customer acquisition for these corporations. An entrance into the sports arena has been part of their mandate, and I think they've done quite well, actually, all of them.
A word from our sponsor.
Hey there, sports fans. Are you looking for fresh and fun takes on the hottest topics in Canadian sports? Well, we've got just what you need. Introducing Homestand Sports Today, your go-to daily sports newsletter, bringing you the Canadian angle on the hottest NHL, NBA, footy stories, and more right to your inbox. But wait, there's more. Homestand Sports isn't just another text-heavy newsletter. Every story has its own video featuring our talented hosts like me, Albert Vartanian, giving you a newsletter experience like never before. And did I mention it's a free subscription? Subscribe now at homestand.ca.
Now back to the show.
What's your day-to-day like with the coalition? Well, I mean, it's kind of a unique job for not just for you, but for anyone. I mean, you're serving different masters, and you're working mm-hmm. for Crown corporations across different parts of the country. Although I'm sure, even though they're in the same industry, I'm sure they'll have their own unique challenges and opportunities.
So it is interesting. I mean, if you look at the history of the Crown corporations. The one sort of unifying force down through the years has been a construct known as the Interprovincial Lottery Corporation. The ILC is the vehicle through which the Crown Corps can pool together for big national lotteries like Lotto Max and Lotto 649 and certain scratch tickets that are sold nationally. So they do have an experience, while they each sort of work separately within their own provincial boundaries. They do have a history of working together in cooperation through the ILC. You have folks that know each other well from these different corporations that are prepared to team up and work together. And there's nothing more unifying than a common cause. And quite frankly, all of these Crown corporations are quite agitated by the business of illegal online gambling, and quite frankly, a little confused by there perhaps hasn't been more enforcement. And certainly that's one thing that we would augur for is to see greater enforcement where and when a gambling operator does not have a legal authority to operate within a particular province, that steps are taken to remedy that situation.
I think that, I just wonder, Will, if there's more the federal government could be doing here. And I ask that, and again, you know this better than I do. We've seen what's happened in the U.S. where, you know, every state has their own regulations and rules and operate. Everybody's trying to figure those out. And you know, again, it is interesting. I think in the U.S. there's 6 or 7 states now that have legal iGaming, despite a lot of lobbying and efforts to expand that number. And mm-hmm. sports betting, I think, is in almost 40 states now. But is there more the federal government could be doing to make this a little bit clearer for everybody in the industry?
Quite possibly. One of the dilemmas as it relates to the whole business of Canadian gaming historically, and you saw this play out over and again with the business of legalizing single event wagering, is Canadian gambling is enabled by federal legislation, but operates under provincial authority. So a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, the feds passed over to the provinces the ability to operate lotteries and games of chance as a revenue generating tool. And so it's right there in the criminal code, a province or series of provinces jointly together conducting and managing lottery schemes. What you have is you have a diffusion of responsibility. I mean, the feds and federal law enables the whole construct that we know as commercial gambling in Canada, but it's up to the provinces to mete it out individually. So sometimes there are particular issues in certain provinces that aren't uniform across all. In this particular instance, there is uniformity, or mostly, I would say, mostly uniformity. You have 8 of 10 Canadian provinces that have agreed that illegal online gambling is an issue and must be dealt with. I don't know that you'll ever get to a place where it's entirely removed. That's at least looking at jurisdictions around the world. That's been difficult, but certainly we can improve the channelization here in Canada, both in Ontario and across the rest of the country. And when I speak about Ontario and illegal gambling, this was really interesting to me. On the second anniversary of iGaming Ontario and the opening of the market, they put out data that suggested that 13.6% of Ontarians still play on unregulated sites. But that wasn't the interesting thing to me. They then said of the other 86.4%, 1 in every 5 of those players confessed to still playing on unregulated sites while favoring some regulated sites. So if you add it up, you're talking about 1 in every 3 players willingly admitting to engaging in illegal online gambling in a province where there are close to 50 operators, OLG included, and better than 70 brands. There's still 1 in 3 players that are favoring illegal sites. And what's interesting about that is I can tell you that figure is likely low. The reason being, my history in commercial gambling has always shown that when people are asked to self-report on their behaviors, they're going to underestimate, especially when it comes to gambling. No, I don't play on illegal sites. In fact, I was quite astonished that the number was that high, because I suggest in reality, if that's what's reported from research findings, from people self-reporting their own habits, I would suggest the number is likely higher than that. Because, you know, oftentimes with gambling surveys, if we ask people, you know, how much do you spend in a month? And in certain instances where we ask the question, where we actually know the figure from things like a loyalty card, and you can actually see a customer spend. Oftentimes, players self-report at a much lower level, either in terms of the number of days they spend in a casino, the amount they spend. So I guarantee you, when you have 13.6% of the population admitting to using unregulated sites only, I guarantee you the number is actually much higher than that. And when you then have this subset of 1 in 5 from those that are using regulated sites admitting to still favoring unregulated sites, again, I would suggest that number is probably a gross underestimation.
And those people too, Will, like I'm assuming that the majority of them would be what I would call experienced gamblers. Is that a fair assertion?
Yeah. Yes and no. You know, quite frankly, the business of you know, gambling on one's phone has opened up a world of access to all types of players. And when you then add in the exponent of the volume of advertising that we're experiencing in all forms, whether it's television, radio, online, social media, et cetera, I don't know necessarily that you're just getting the sharps playing illegal sites. I think you're going to have all sorts playing to different sites that, as again, going back to what I said earlier, they might not fully understand or comprehend that they're on a site that's you know, unregulated.
I am curious, just because of your years of experience at OLG, do you find that the people you're dealing with at the Crown Corporations now, they do want to pick your brain a bit on your past history and what you've seen and what you've done? And I think if that's the case, I'm sure that's one of the things that you're really enjoying about this position.
It is. You know, it's infused with a certain degree of social purpose. So professionally, it's a bit of a joy because you feel that you're contributing to something significant and meaningful. And then personally, when you mention these people from different Crown Corporations, they're a great bunch. Really, really a great bunch. I mean, I often remark, you know, someone said to me, they came to one of our events years ago at OLG that involved the staff from the casinos that we ran and directly operated ourselves. They said, "What a great group." I said, "Well, yeah." I said, "You have to understand, these people, their professional livelihood is based entirely around welcoming in customers and making them feel like they're special and they're valued and they're appreciated and treating them to great hospitality for a night out." I said, that just isn't, you know, sort of a professional skill. Oftentimes that's a personal disposition. And I've witnessed that, you know, from people across the country in this industry. And when I say that, I'm not just limiting it to Crown Corporations, but you know, vendors, suppliers, the trade media that covers the industry. It's a very friendly, accommodating, welcoming, great group.
That's a perfect segue to my next question and one of my last ones, and that's the Canadian Gaming Summit in June. And you know, one of the items on the agenda that I'm definitely most interested in is a kind of a get together of CEOs from the various Crown Corporations that you're going to be moderating. I think on the second day of the Canadian Gaming Summit, and Candice Machado, the CEO of the Alberta Gaming Lottery Corporation, will be involved, as Pat Davis, who you mentioned earlier, from BCLC, Jean-Francois Bergeron, the president and CEO of Lotto Canada, and Patrick Daigh, the president and CEO of the Atlantic Lotteries Corporation. And I think sometimes it feels like there's maybe a bit of a, you know, there's a lot of tension between operators and the lottery corporations. And you know, I was going to say kudos to the Canadian Gaming Association and SBC for having bringing this group together for a panel discussion during the conference. But I'm probably exaggerating that there is this unholy alliance between the Crown Corps and operators.
So
is that a good way to put it, Will?
Goodness gracious, unholy alliance. I would maybe uneasy alliance on that. Here's what I would say. One of the things in 11 years that I was at OLG that I became incredibly sensitive to was, you know, visitors to the summit year after year would refer to it jokingly as the Ontario Gaming Summit. And that it was oftentimes accused of being just too Ontario focused. You know, the notable exceptions being one year I traveled to Calgary way back when, and there was another year where it was in Vancouver, but largely it's been resident in the GTA for some time now. And it's had an incredible focus on Ontario. And quite frankly, part of that is deserved by the fact that, you know, they've made this seismic change and opened up a legalized, regulated, and monitored online gaming space. Part of that is by dint of just, you know, the sheer volume of gambling in this province. I mean, you're talking about an Ontario 10,000 points of sale for lottery, beyond digital means to buy lottery tickets. You're talking about more than 30 casinos. You're talking about a whole host of live racing horse tracks that receive public funding by way of OLG through the provincial government. It is a big gambling center, not just by Canadian standards, but by North American standards as well. That being said, it's about time, and you know, good on the SBC and the CGA for recognizing that there's a value in hearing from the other provinces. And so with pride of place, they've put this Crown Corporation discussion right at the start of day two and deemed it to be one of the keynote sessions throughout the duration of the conference. So as you mentioned, I'm moderating, I'm the traffic cop, and I'm operating under the firm belief, the less of me, the more of them, the better we'll all be. And so the crowd there will get to know and understand and hear from these four CEOs and their views, not just of the health of the industry in their province a couple years removed from a pandemic, but perhaps how their provinces have been impacted and influenced by what's taken place here in Ontario. So eventually the discussion will wind itself back to Ontario, but it's good to hear from other parts of the country and other parts of the industry. I mean, BCLC in its own right, I mean, massive, massive operator, Lotto Quebec, goodness gracious, one of the biggest operators in North America, that literally does everything itself. They run their own casinos and gaming halls. They don't contract it out to a service provider. And they've added on with very customer pleasing amenities in many of those settings. So, and of course, Ms. Machado is sitting at an interesting place, time-wise, history-wise, because of course you and me and many other people have heard or read in mandate letters of the possibility that they might be next. So it'll be fascinating to hear from her. And Mr. Daig from ALC is just an absolutely lovely gentleman, really sharp, really witty. So when you talk about putting a collection together of powerhouses like that, I mean, if you were putting together a list of, call it the 6 to 8 most influential people in Canadian gaming, all four of them would make that list. Absolutely. And so getting a chance to hear from them will be a treat to everyone at the conference. Getting to hear from me, probably determinately less so. So as I say, my intent is to very much stay out of the way as much as possible.
That sounds like a power panel for the Gaming News Canada show. Well, maybe while we're on the floor at the Metro Toronto Convention Centre in June, maybe get you to help us facilitate that and get the four of them together on the podcast. Hey, Will, just in Alberta, when you're talking, I was going to ask you a question. Is there a role for the coalition to play in what's going on in Alberta?
No, not really. I mean, you've likely noticed when I've mentioned over again our coalition membership that there are two provinces that are absent, Ontario and Alberta. And so at least for now, they are, as I mentioned right off the top, they serve at the pleasure of government. And so the good folks at AGLC are waiting to see the political direction that they receive from the center or from their minister that they report to as to what the future holds. I know from speaking with people outside of Alberta, within the industry, there seems to be, I don't want to call it frustration because that's almost too strong a word, but perhaps a thwarted expectation that the province perhaps could have and should have been opened before now. It's taking some time, and perhaps from what I hear from whispers across the industry, might take longer still. This is no easy feat. I think, you know, reflecting back on you know, Premier Ford putting a note in his 2019 budget about we're going to open up the market, and there it was April 2022, and it was opened. And in between, there was that small business of a global pandemic. I think people, you know, could stand and maybe perhaps appreciate all the more what the AGCO and iGaming Ontario did and the lengths that they went through to actually stand up a market in a timely fashion, because it's not easy. And certainly, I think perhaps to some extent, you're seeing that in Alberta. In the meantime, they're continuing on with their own efforts against the illegal gambling market. You might recall that AGLC put together quite a clever ad campaign where they riffed off different popular movies of the past to talk about the horrors of illegal gambling, and did so quite well. They're as possessed with the idea of illegal gambling as we are. So it remains a common cause.
Yeah, and that's a valid or a great point, Will, you make about AGCO and IGO. And again, I think sometimes I need to rein myself in a bit, and I have been critical at times of IGO. But as Martha Otten will remind me when I run into her at conferences, and I have a lot of respect for both Martha and Mitch Davidson. I think, you have to remember sometimes that we are, for IGO, it's less than 3 years old, and what they've been able to put together in a relatively short period of time, as you mentioned earlier, is something to be celebrated or at least acknowledged. Mm-hmm. Last question, Will, if I just get you to take off your coalition cap for 30 or 45 seconds, and you're someone who's knowledgeable about this industry, you're passionate about it. Is there a storyline or an issue or something that you're following with a lot of interest right now? And just given everything going on with regulated gambling in North America.
It's interesting. Let me think for 1 second, and obviously not too long, because you only gave me a 30 or 40 second allowance. I suppose one of the things that I'm hearing, and this is I think quite interesting, is while you're seeing that casinos across the country are reporting that they're meeting pre-pandemic revenue totals, I'm told empirically and anecdotally that foot traffic is lower, essentially, while you're getting back to the level that you were at prior to COVID, you're doing so with maybe not demonstrably, but less customers than before, which means that you're working to, achieve more with less customers. So obviously you're really privileging those high value customers. I don't know whether there's a direct correlation, say in Ontario, to the opening of a legalized market, and whether there's any kind of impact that's being played out on the land-based side of things. I imagine there is some influence, perhaps not undue or overwrought. So that's one thing. Is the business of gambling, as I've told you many times before, has struggled North America wide to crack the millennial nut. That people under the age of 35 aren't going to casinos and aren't buying lottery tickets. They aren't as possessed to play a slot machine or a table game with the same frequency and enthusiasm as their parents and their grandparents before them. So how do you pivot and change the offering? And certainly digital is one solution, but offering greater entertainment at your land-based gaming sites is another. How do you respond and draw in younger customers? Because you don't want to see your primary customer base age out. So I'm monitoring that relative to these reports of slightly less people in the casinos than prior to the pandemic. That's one thing that I find interesting. And it's certainly I'm going to be fascinated to hear from our CEOs as to how they plan to continue to draw in younger customers, because it's been the perpetual dilemma, not just here in Canada, but across the US as well.
Yeah, I think, obviously you could point to the economy, Will, and I do wonder if there's still a bit of post-pandemic nervousness about gathering in public places. Although, on the other hand, the last time I was in Toronto, the restaurants were full, and you and I are both avid sports fans, and we're watching the Blue Jays, and we're watching the Leafs, and we're full sports stadiums, and the concert venue seems full again. So I think your explanation about trying to get millennials into those facilities, that makes a lot of sense. And there probably is a little bit of cannibalization given,
a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned earlier, there's only a small number of U.S. states that have legalized online casino. Typically, when you look at the political proceedings that go around the legalization of online casino, oftentimes you'll hear from people that talk about the cannibalization from digital. It all adds up to money into government coffers, but you don't want that money to come at the expense of jobs. And so there's a great concern. I mean, typically you've seen it played out over and again in the state of Maryland, where the concern over potentially a 10% drop in revenue to its land-based casinos have thwarted all efforts at getting online casino pushed across the goal line in the Terrapin state.
Right. Will Hill is the executive director of the Canadian Lottery Coalition. Will, it's been far, far too long. Every time we you and I have a chance to chat, it's I thoroughly enjoy the opportunity to do so. So thanks so much for coming back to the show. Certainly look forward to seeing you in June at the Canadian Gaming Summit. And let's not wait so long between appearances for you to come back to the podcast.
Very good. So before you press the red button and cut off the recording, let me once again, as I'm wont to do and have done in the past, thank you and Mark Silver and all the good folks at Gaming News Canada. What you're doing for the industry is invaluable. It's filling a void that existed for many, many years where there was a paucity of information about this industry. And so while you've gone entirely, you've put down your pen, but made a business of picking up your microphone with even greater frequency, what you're doing is valued, it's appreciated, it's meaningful. And so on a professional level, I thank you. And of course, being a friend of yours for going on better than two decades now, personally, you're always valued and appreciated, my friend. So thank you for making time for me, for the coalition, and for all that you're doing for the broader industry. It is noticed, it is valued, and it is appreciated.
You're too kind, Will. And I was going to say, you and I have to stick together because I'm not sure anybody has had more jobs than you and I. So we're a very tight and small fraternity, my friend.
Very good.
That's it for this edition of the Gaming News Canada Show podcast. Thanks again to Will Hill. Later in the week, we're going to have Sue Schneider, the Vice President of Strategy for SBC, on to help us tee up next week's SBC Summit North America and also the Canadian Gaming Summit in June, as Will and I were discussing earlier. So looking forward to our conversation with Sue. As always, you can find the podcast on gamingnewscanada.ca and the various podcast platforms. And we will look forward to seeing everybody again soon.
Thank you for listening to the Gaming News Canada show. Sign up for our newsletter at gamingnewscanada.ca. Follow Steve McAllister on LinkedIn. Message Steve if you're interested in being a sponsor or featured guest.